Hello, my name is Yangmei Ui, and this is the Fusion View podcast. Fusion View is my personal cross-cultural view on life, culture, running, social media, and anything else that takes my interest. You can also check out my blog at www.fusionview.co.uk. Well, in today's show, I talk about quite a number of things other than running, for a change. The reason is that I've still been having some trouble with my left leg since my injury a few weeks ago. But fortunately, I've had quite a number of things to distract me. So in this week's show, I'm going to be talking about a really excellent DVD called Running the Sahara, which I think will appeal to runners and non-runners alike. Also, we take a visit to some allotments in South London and get some inspiration for our vegetable patch in the back garden. And I do manage to try a small little run towards the end of the podcast and with a little bit of anxiety and trepidation because of my leg. So I'll be reporting on that later in the podcast. But before all that, I'd like to tell you about my long weekend in Strasbourg. It was my mother's 70th birthday. Well, it is her 70th birthday during this month of May. And my sister and I decided to treat her and take her for a long weekend in Strasbourg. Now, Strasbourg is in France. It's not Salzburg, which is in Austria. It's Strasbourg in France. It's on the French and German border. And it's an unlikely place to go for a holiday, as most people, whenever I've said to them, we're going to Strasbourg on holiday, they say, well, why? I chose it because it's, according to the guidebook, it's a small little town where the European Parliament is, but it also has a small medieval section which is pretty much entirely pedestrianised. And from the guidebook, I thought, well, this is perfect for my mum. We can walk around and not be too hampered by traffic, and it's not too big. I was a little bit nervous about how it was going to turn out, whether it would be interesting for her or not. In the end, it turned out to be absolutely perfect. As described in the guidebook, there is this wonderful medieval section which is essentially an island surrounded by the river Ile and medieval canals, it's pedestrianised with charming little alleyways as well as a big cathedral square with a medieval cathedral there. And we just had such a really relaxing and restful time wandering through the cobbled medieval streets, enjoying the medieval buildings. They were sort of timber-framed buildings. And my sister said it sort of reminded her of the cartoon Pinocchio, because all those houses had that sort of Germanic Bavarian feel about it. And everyone was very friendly. They speak French, German and English, so it was very easy to get around and to function as a tourist, they were very, very welcoming, and because it's slightly off the beaten track, it's not a big city like Paris, Madrid, New York, or Barcelona, all those places where many tourists go. It was very calm and nice, and you had that feeling that wherever we went to eat or wandered around, it was really full of French people and locals, and there were not hordes of busloads of tourists. So we really, really enjoyed that charming, relaxing time, and I would certainly recommend it. I was quite pleased that my ankle also held up. I had it strapped, I was a bit worried about, you know, doing touristy things all day, wandering around and so on, but it was fine, so I was quite pleased about that. On the running front, I was quite surprised and delighted. On the Sunday morning, when we were there, we heard all this racket, this noise and cheering and music from our hotel, which was in the centre of the medieval city. And when we wandered out to have our little stroll in the morning, we came across the Strasbourg Marathon, and they had closed off quite a number of streets. And of course, we were slightly frustrated because we were here to be tourists and to look at all these streets and so on, so we couldn't go down the streets that we wanted to. But we were able to stand against the barriers and watch the marathon. And the great thing was that because it's not a big city and it's not a major international marathon, it was actually quite small and not too crowded, and you really got a sense that you were right up close against the runners. And the first runners, of course, they were the Kenyans, and they just zipped by in a flash of lightning. And then, of course, a little bit later on, the more sort of average middle of the pack people came along. And it was great. It was really great to see them zipping along. And I kept saying, if only I had my running shoes, I could join them. But of course, in reality, I couldn't, because the furthest I've run so far is about five to six miles. But certainly something to aspire to. Anyway, so that's my report from Strasbourg, and now on with the rest of the show. We watched the DVD last night of a documentary about three guys who ran across the Sahara. It's called Running the Sahara, and it is an absolutely fascinating documentary, and just about an amazing feat of endurance, and also it showed you something about what life is like in these incredibly arid places across Africa. These guys were an American, a chap called Charlie, a Canadian called Ray, and a Taiwanese guy called Kevin. And they had all met through an endurance ultra marathon events. And they just decided on the spur of the moment that wouldn't it be amazing to run across the Sahara? So they got sponsorship money together and set off from the west coast of Africa in Senegal from the Atlantic Ocean, and ran across eastwards across most of Africa through Nigeria and Libya and up into Egypt, where they ended their journey at the Red Sea. And it took them 111 days, and it was the equivalent of running 170 marathons. It was about two and a bit more marathons a day. It was incredible. They got sponsorship and had a support team, which was a doctor, a sort of project team expedition leader, who organized all the passes and access through all these different countries. And the three guys ran on foot through incredible scenery from the Atlantic Ocean through some very, very squalid and poverty-stricken areas of Africa, through the bush, and then finally into what we picture as the Sahara, which is just sand for as far as the eye can see, sand dunes and incredible heat, and they ran through sandstorms and so on. And it was just fascinating watching them, and as they progressed, they started off looking pretty fit and healthy, and as they progressed, they lost an incredible amount of weight, so that by the end of their ultra marathon, they were skinny, and just looking exhausted. And the film documented their ups and downs, their difficulties, their emotional stresses, and the arguments that they had on the way. And what came through was that the guy whose idea it was, Charlie, the American, was really very, very driven, very passionate, and had a sort of all or nothing attitude. And I guess it's that kind of attitude that gets people through these incredibly hard, challenging events. And he was always up for challenging himself and the others. And I think the impression we got was that some of the support team and others found him very difficult, were that kind of attitude doesn't really win you any friends, but it does enable you to achieve amazing things. And so towards the end, they were able to run 50 miles a day, you know, pretty easily, from what they were saying, that their bodies had got used to those conditions. And so in the last 100 100 miles or something like that, or was it 100k? I can't quite remember. Anyway, they decided they were going to run non-stop for the last 100 miles, and just because, you know, it was getting too easy to be running, you know, 50 miles a day and then resting. So this chap Charlie really pushed them and drove on, and they did achieve it. I mean, I suppose maybe I've spoilt it for you now. I've told you that that they make it, but it was an incredible. Just we were fascinated just by the scenery that they ran through, and their perseverance and the endurance and just the whole journey of it. And on along the way, they were really struck by the water situation in Africa, or the lack of water. Subsequently, the runners created the H2O Africa Foundation to raise money and awareness for the need for water in Africa. So if you think about it, if your whole day is spent, you know, as a little villager or a nomadic person in Africa, going to find water, trying to just, you know, get to survive, you really have no time or energy for any other enterprise or business or job and so on. So without something as simple and basic as water, a lot of people in Africa are, you know, really struggling to survive. So it was really interesting to see that these guys saw the need and really experienced it for themselves, I suppose, running through those kinds of temperatures, and then actually did something about it when they came home. Really fascinating movie. I would recommend it to you, especially if you're a runner. You'd find it absolutely riveting. But also, if you're not a runner, it's just a really interesting film about personalities, the kind of a kind of character drama of the three guys and their support team, and also about something grand and great, and about human endeavour and what people can achieve. So I'd really recommend it to anyone. And I believe that there is a website, runningthesahara.com, if you want to check it out online. I'll put the link on my blog, so you can you can link to it from there. It's a Sunday afternoon in South London on a very blustery day. It's spitting and windy, but we're down here at the Kent House Road allotments, and it's just incredible. In the middle of South London, there's this vast area that's just covered with different allotments. And allotments, for those of you who don't know, it's people can come to this communal space and rent a little piece of land where they can grow vegetables and fruit and flowers and anything that you can think of. And we've just seen a number of vineyards, tiny little vineyards, and our guide friend, who was our guide, Mick, took us round and showed us one vine that looked huge and ancient, but it wasn't a very big vine, you know, relative to the kinds of vines that you would get in a vineyard in France or whatever, you know, the commercial types that you see. But this vineyard, this little vine, he said, produced, was it 170 litres of wine? And he was actually had a glass of wine in his hand from 2006 that had been created from one of his friend's vineyards, or tiny little plot of vineyard in this allotment, which is just incredible. Mick himself is a beekeeper, and I've mentioned him before on my blog, and the Bromley Beekeepers Association have their clubhouse here, and they had a tent today showing up all the sort of beekeeping paraphernalia, and there quite a lot of people came, he said, to find out all about beekeeping, and it seems to be that that's the latest trend, that people are very interested in keeping bees, and so, which is a great thing, because according to the news, bees are diminishing and dying out, and in danger of becoming an endangered species in the UK, and of course that has consequences for the ecosystem. So it's fantastic that people are interested in in starting to keep bees, and looking around this allotment, it's just amazing. We're now sort of wandering through someone's allotment, which is very, very formal, with raised beds and well designed, with a sort of a big circle of plants in the middle, and square beds around. It's sort of almost the Versailles of allotments. And for other people, if you look at the other allotments, it's all a bit messy and a bit grungy. And each kind of plot really reflects, it seems to me, the personality of the different people who are tending them. Some are very, very tidy, and very with a great profusion of vegetables, and looked after very well. And others are sort of more unkempt, but still growing different kinds of things in abundance. What's been quite interesting for me is that Mick pointed out some gooseberries in a bush, and of course I've never seen a gooseberry bush. I've only just seen them in a plate. So it's been fascinating for me. This is a fantastic way to spend a blustery Sunday afternoon. At first, when I came, I was a bit miserable because it was raining and cold, and we got lost and we couldn't find Mick. But when we did find him, the rain eased off, and it's been great fun wandering around, just seeing what people do that's different from what I normally do, because I'm very sort of home based, computer based, city based, it's a whole new world for me. It's fantastic. I've now got home from the allotment, and I've come out into our back garden to take a look at the vegetable patch that we're trying to create, and trying is the operative word. We've been trying to create this vegetable patch since the beginning of the year. It's right at the very back of the garden, and it was a little patch that had really nothing going for it. And so what we've done is carved it out into a nice flowing semi-oval circle, and with the idea that we will dig up the grass and dig up all the weeds and all the brambles and all the rubbish that's here, and eventually plant our vegetables. But it's taken a while to get going, because initially we wanted to create a raised bed, and the gardener came along and he kind of carved out the shape for us. And then about when he finished that, he turned around and said, well, actually, I'm not really interested in helping you create the raised bed. I'm getting too old. I really just want to get on with gardening. So having waited for him for several months to come and do this, we're now sort of half kind of come unstuck. And we had been thinking, well, how are we going to get this raised bed done and so on? But actually, coming back from the allotment and seeing that many of the gardeners there actually don't have raised beds, and actually you don't need a raised bed to grow lovely vegetables, we're having a rethink. And probably what we just need to do is dig up a lot of the unhealthy looking soil and put in a lot of compost, and just get on with it. We have actually a grapevine that's going up along the fence. Most of it seems to be on our neighbour's side, because that's where the sun is, and it's crept over onto that side. And I think what I need to do is trail some of the twines and vines back on this side, with a view to growing our grapevine and perhaps having our own little vineyard inspired by what we saw in the allotments. And I think the main task now is to dig up this patch, really work on it, get rid of the weeds and the rubbish and the brambles and so on, and put down some compost. And my partner's been potting, as if that's the word, potting little seedlings and so on. And so we've actually got a lot of plants sitting in trays and little pots ready to go into the soil. So we just need to get on with doing this. So it's been very inspiring going along to the allotments to get some good ideas for our little patch. And I have to say, though, that I'm not very good at gardening. I guess a lot of my time has been taken up with running and going to the gym for strength exercises in between the running, and really getting out there in my running gear rather than staying and working in the garden. And I don't know whether that's because it's part of a midlife crisis in my mid-40s, preferring to go for a run and so on, rather than staying home, staying indoors in the backyard, working on the garden, because somehow in my mind, gardening, I associate gardening with the seniors and elderly people who've retired and who are just pottering about in the potting shed and so on. But I'm sure that's just a mental prejudice that I have. And actually, when I come out here in the garden and start working in the soil, I really enjoy it. So, well, let's hope that I can manage to do the running and work on the garden. It's all good for the health, good for the physique. And good to be out enjoying the lovely weather, or not so lovely weather as the case may be, but at least out in the elements. Okay, it's been about 3 weeks, just over 3 weeks since my fun run, and just over 2 weeks since I last ran properly. And as you may know if you've been listening to previous episodes, I haven't been able to run due to having pulled something in my left leg. It was in the sort of back of my upper thigh. And I went to see the osteo, who told me that I shouldn't run, and if I did, to do it quite gently. And it had happened just before the fun run, and I ran anyway, and of course that made it worse. And so I rested it for about a week, and then started running again very gently, and that seemed to go very well, and I was quite pleased. And then it was just crazy. I felt like a cartoon character, or like Tom and Jerry, or the Three Stooges, or something, where you have this person who has these pratfalls and hapless accidents happening to them all the time. So I had just got back into running again the week after the fun run, and one night I got up in the night to go to the loo, and I was sort of quite tired, and I staggered out of bed and completely pranged my left toe on the edge of a bookcase, and it was just awful in the middle of the night when I was half asleep, and then just suddenly this excruciating pain. It was just awful. I went to the loo, came back and went to bed again and managed to fall asleep. And then the next morning when I got up, my little toe on my left foot was just in agony. And it swelled up, and it was this horrible, horrible black and blue colour. I strapped it, and I the next day I was able to run. It wasn't too painful, and I was just going very gently, and it was fine. And so I thought, oh well, I just put some ice on it, and it'll go away, and it'll be fine. So I wasn't too put out. And a few days later, it was the bank holiday Monday. We were walking to lunch just down the road along this very normal suburban pavement. And suddenly I stepped on an uneven bit of ground just by a manhole cover. You know how with some manhole covers they're kind of slightly raised because they've got all the sort of asphalt around it. And I didn't see that it was very, very uneven. And I just completely just went over. On my left ankle, sprained it, fell over. It was raining a little bit, so I had the brolly up. So the brolly went flying. Some people came rushing up. Are you all right? Are you all right? And I was rolling around on the ground, clutching my ankle, going, oh God, oh. And of course, swearing away like with language that I can't repeat here. And I just could not believe it. Such ridiculous nonsense and such bad luck. I've always had weak ankles ever since I was a teenager, when I stepped into a hole in the road when it was quite dark and just really wrenched my ankle. And then it's been a weak point for me all through my life. And so it was just infuriating. And I iced it and put it up, and it was the worst sprain that I'd had for quite a while, and I actually couldn't really walk very well for the whole day, the whole of the next day. So I just rested it on the sofa, iced it, hobbled about. Fortunately, I could work from home because of the wonders of technology and with remote access. And so I managed to get quite a lot done while sitting at my desk with my foot up on a little stool. But it just meant that I couldn't run for the next little while. And so it's been frustrating, infuriating, and just horrible. Anyway, I've managed to do some cross training. I've been to the gym a couple of times, and it's Monday evening now, a couple of weeks after this ridiculous spraining of my ankle, and I'm going to try and go for a little run. It feels fine, a little bit fragile. I've been walking on it, I've been going to the gym on it, and there's no strapping on it for my normal daily activities, but today I put a strap on it just to kind of give me a little bit of comfort. But I have to say I'm feeling a little bit nervous. Just a bit anxious because I'm afraid that if it hurts or if it feels wrenched, and I'm going to have to rest it some more. So just feeling a little bit anxious. I'm in my running gear and I've got my shoes on, sort of lightly tied over the strapped ankle, and the other one is fine. And again, just sort of trying to be confident and not to go out too strong today, but just to gently have a little run and hopefully feel that I'm back on track. Anyway, I just wanted to share this with you. I'll report back after the run, and hopefully when you next hear from me again in a few minutes, you'll hear me positive and cheerful and not frustrated and depressed. Let's see, we shall see. Well, I'm back from my run, and I'm very, very pleased to report that it all went very well. With my strapped ankle, I trotted around the park. I did three laps, which is about 5K, and I did it without stopping. So I'm glad to say that my level of fitness has maintained, which is good, partly I think because of going to the gym and going on the bike and the cross trainer. So I'm really, really pleased that the ankle held out, and it didn't give me any trouble at all. I was going quite slowly, probably averaging about 13 and a half minute mile, which is fairly slow, but a good pace for easing back in, and it was a lovely evening, lovely sunlight, and quite breezy, so it kept me cool, and I bumped into my friend Sue, who did the fun run with me, and who was the inspiration for getting me into running in a big way, and she was just about to set off on her evening run as I finished my second lap, my second mile. So I ran the third mile with her. We sort of trotted quite slowly around the park and chatted and caught up with each other, because we hadn't seen each other for about 2.5 weeks or so. So it was good, and I hadn't, because we were meant to be going running in the evenings together from time to time, and I hadn't called her because this was the first time that I was going to go for my run since my leg injury, and I wasn't sure how it was going to be, whether I would be limping along and having to stop all the time, so it was quite good that I bumped into her so we could catch up and be sociable, and at the same time my leg was holding up, which was really excellent. There was one funny moment though at the beginning when I first started on my run. It was a bit frustrating because I kept looking at my heart rate monitor watch, and it kept showing that I was dead. I had no heartbeat, clearly what was the problem was that the strap that goes around my chest, I think it wasn't sitting properly. So by this time I was sort of in deep in the park and not very near where the toilets were. So what to do? I carried on for a bit, but it was getting too irritating because it kept showing that, double zero, I had no heartbeat. So in the end, I was so frustrated, I dived into some bushes and kind of surreptitiously kind of started sort of tucking my bra up and so that I could readjust the strap and fiddle around, and it was all very embarrassing because I wasn't entirely hidden by the bushes, and there were people sort of walking by and cycling by, and I was just kind of, you know, I kind of pretended I didn't see them doing the ostrich in the hope that if I didn't see them, surely then they couldn't see me fiddling with my bra and everything. But anyway, I finally got it sorted. And I'm pleased to say that with the embarrassment over, my heart rate monitor was working fine. So all in very a good result. So that means that I'm now back to running regularly. I'm going to build up slowly. I'm not push it and not get overexcited and do myself in with another injury. I'm really, really pleased. Anyway, so that wraps it up for this show. If you want to see some of the photos from the allotments, the Kent House Road allotments, of the South London vineyards and the various different plots, then go on to my blog, fusionview.co.uk, and I'll put a slideshow up of some of the photos that we took there. So thank you for listening. If you want to leave me a voicemail or an email, then go to the blog and go to the contact page, which is www.fusionview.co.uk/contact. All the various links and things that I've mentioned, I'll put links up on the blog. So thank you for listening, and see you next time.